There is mining opportunity in New Brunswick from a critical minerals perspective that includes antimony, indium, tungsten, molybdenum, manganese. So we're inviting people to come here and check out how accessible the mining opportunities in New Brunswick are, because you don't need to build an ice road that's going to survive for a couple seasons. It's literally in the community next door and very well serviced. So those are some exciting opportunities. And we could talk more about energy infrastructure, because we're investing in wind, we're investing in solar, we have a nuclear base, we're looking at hydrogen projects. And so there's some really interesting energy infrastructure opportunities in New Brunswick right now.
Welcome to Building Connections, presented by IPIX. In each episode, we delve into the world of construction, exploring how key leaders in the space shape the infrastructures of tomorrow. Discover the stories behind the solutions that impact municipal, commercial, and residential projects across North America.
Welcome to Building Connections, the podcast where we explore the critical issues shaping industries, infrastructure, and economic development. I'm your host, Greg Blackett, and today we're honored to have a special guest, Susan Holt, the Premier of New Brunswick. Premier Holt has been a strong advocate for economic growth, trade, and innovation, working to create opportunities for businesses and workers in New Brunswick. Premier Holt, welcome to Building Connections.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a treat to be here.
Awesome. So look, if you go back to your roots, Susan, and growing up in Fredericton, did you ever picture yourself leading the province?
You know what? New Brunswick's a small place. And so if I think back to my early days in Fredericton, I can actually remember when Premier Frank McKenna won the election out of 87, landslide, won every seat, and moved into my neighborhood. And so maybe I was one of those lucky people for whom the premier was just the guy next door. And his kids were in my elementary school and junior high and middle school. And we used to see him walking down the street to go to the legislature. And so maybe that accessibility helped it not seem like the world's craziest thing to imagine that I might be a premier, because the guy next door was the premier. But it really wasn't, you know, it wasn't a goal of mine when we were at university together and I was studying chemistry. Like, it wasn't part of the path. And, you know, when I was in Toronto selling photocopiers, it was not something I was driving towards. You can't predict how your life turns out. I love this province. And I've never been able to shake it, as much as I went away for university and went away for work and worked in other countries around the world and in other places in Canada. I love this place. And I was drawn back here to raise my family here and to contribute to it. This being a great place. This is the best province in the world. I know you've been. We're phenomenally rich in natural assets, with the highest tides and deep woods and warm saltwater beaches and lakes and just the friendliest people, and a really resilient spirit that's based in being craftspeople, but creative, maybe a little cheeky. And I wanted to fight for this place. And somehow that got me into politics. And now it got me here, which is just the honor of a lifetime.
Your background is exceptional, and your character as well. And you mentioned having a family. So you're a mom of three, I think. What's it like being full-time premier and managing the great family you have as well?
Thankfully, it's a co-management of the family. I have an exceptional partner who, his selflessness and wanting to support me means that he is home full time with our kids, and actually looks after the neighborhood's kids too, for that matter. So we do it together. And we were also very lucky to have three healthy kids. And so they are on board so far. The going hasn't gotten exceptionally tough yet. Maybe it will in the years ahead, but we're, and maybe again, it's because of what we saw, right? I mentioned Frank McKenna. He had three kids, one of them in grade six when he became premier. And so we're lucky. We're supported by grandparents and neighbors and people in New Brunswick who I think respect the difference between being a politician and being a politician's kid. And I'm hopeful that my kids will be able to come through this without being too, I don't know what, strange at the end of it. But
I'm sure they will, and it will be a great exposure for them, I'm sure. growing up. So let's talk a little bit about some of the challenges you mentioned. Let's start about tariffs. Right off the start of this conversation, it seems to be a topic that's on everyone's mind right now, whether you're in the province of New Brunswick or in any of the other provinces. You're on the manufacturing side like we are, where we export and import across the border. I wanted to get your take on where you think the tariffs are going, if you think they're going to be implemented, and maybe some of the conversations you've been having in Washington, how we should, as manufacturers, think about the tariffs or not tariffs coming.
Yeah, it is something certainly on my mind, and I know on a lot of Canadians' minds, because of the impact and the threat. I don't think we as a country have seen this kind of economic threat, broad-based 25% tariffs across the board. And not only that, the uncertainty of the person making them, who said they were coming and then they didn't come, and then they were going to come later and then they weren't going to, and then they were going to get modified, and then it was this and then it was that. And we're trying to guess at what the president's going to do or say next. But all the while, I've been really proud to be part of Team Canada with the other premiers and with the federal government, who have been working every angle to make sure that the U.S. understands how tightly integrated they are with Canada and how painful this is going to be for them, because it's certainly going to be painful for us. And you would, your business would understand that you can't slap a 25% cost onto the price of your product and expect it to compete the same way in the U.S. market, at least in the sectors where there is lots of competition. Now, there are some sectors where Canada is the only game in town. And if the U.S. isn't buying from us, they're not going to find themselves buying from anybody else. So we have some pretty strong leverage points around some pretty critical products like potash, like oil and gas and electricity and energy products, like aluminum that's been raised, uranium. This is stuff that isn't, it's not coming from a lot of other countries into the U.S. So there's a lot of work being done. I want to reassure folks, I can't offer you the path. I barely want to guess as to whether tariffs are actually going to show up on March 4th, because every day it changes. But I do have some hope and optimism that the work that we've been doing to make sure that U.S. governors and senators and congresspeople and the Secretary of Commerce knows and sees the impact that this is going to have. It's going to drive prices up for Americans. It's going to drive inflation up for Americans. It's going to make it harder for them to build homes because lumber prices are going to go up. It's going to make it harder for them to build cars because of how integrated those marketplaces are. That's not what they want. That's not their ultimate goal here. But what is their ultimate goal is hard to determine. They say they want reciprocity, a level playing field. They want to reset the global trade order and make sure that where they're selling, they're receiving goods from other countries, they're not being tariffed to get into those goods, that get into those countries. But I'm optimistic that we will find a path through this, and that whatever pain comes, it will be short-lived. But it is also a good wake-up call for a lot of Canadians that we had a lot of eggs in the American basket. And go figure, they're right next door. They're an easy trading partner, right? It's there. In some cases, they're easier to trade with than the neighboring province than it is to trade with the U.S. But we need to be more resilient and more diversified. And so that's actually an opportunity for New Brunswick, because our positioning on the Far Eastern Seaboard, the Port of St. John, and the growth that we've seen in that critical piece of our economic infrastructure has been, it's been rapid, and their connections to the world have been growing, as well as their connections into the U.S. and across Canada. Our port in Beldune is building more and more connectivity over to Europe. And so those markets aren't as unreachable as we used to think, maybe. And it's a great time for us to be building on the allies, the natural allies that we have around the world, the opportunity that the Canada-European Union trade agreement presented us with almost a decade ago that we haven't fully realized yet. So there's opportunity out there. I'm optimistic the pain with these U.S. tariffs won't be long-lived, and it'll spur us to act to eliminate internal trade barriers in a way we might not have otherwise. And maybe it'll spur us to support each other in a way that we haven't in a while. So
yeah. What you're explaining is a bit maybe a silver lining, in the sense that we've got a great resource base. there's an international or global community we just need to tap into to mitigate some of the risks. And New Brunswick is a bit poised to do that based on some of the infrastructure capabilities that are there and that you're bringing on. So maybe let's talk about the infrastructure projects that you're bringing on in New Brunswick. I think a big topic as part of your platform was housing. Let's talk about housing. It's a problem across Canada in terms of being able to build houses financially or economically viable, and especially for low-cost housing across the board. Maybe just remind us, what was your commitment and where do you see housing development in New Brunswick over the next few years?
Yeah, thanks for that, because absolutely New Brunswickers are feeling the challenges of the housing crisis, maybe similarly to some of the rest of Canada, but also in different ways. We have seen an increase in costs of housing that related to both per capita and to the wage base have been larger than most other places. Our increase in rents was the largest in the country at over 10% increase in rents year over year. And same with their increase in base housing pricing. So if you're looking to get into the market, those prices have gone up much more rapidly than our economy has. But there are ways through it. We've put in some policy mechanisms like rent cap. We're tackling issues like property taxation. And our property tax system here in New Brunswick is a really blunt instrument. We only have three types of property tax. A lot of places in the rest of the country have 27 different categories of property tax, whether you're light, medium, heavy, or super heavy industrial, whether you're affordable housing or multi-unit housing or you name it. And we have three categories, right? You're either industrial, you're residential, or you're non-owner occupied, as we call it. So we have to overhaul our property tax system so that it helps us drive the society that we want. We are the last jurisdiction to take off or to take advantage of the Fed's rebate on HST for multi-unit builds. But we have done that, and we've done it retroactively to November 15th because we want to make sure that this is a competitive development environment and people aren't thinking, where am I going to do my next 100 unit project? Well, certainly won't be New Brunswick because they don't have the 15% rebate. We do now, and we're making property taxes more competitive, and our municipalities have really streamlined their approval systems through their planning committees and things like that. But getting into the hardest stuff to build, so that is that deeply affordable or housing. New Brunswick, I don't know if many of your viewers or listeners would know this, but we are a modular housing expert. There are a number of modular housing companies here that are seeing their businesses grow great guns, a lot in other provinces than ours. We need to become a better customer of our own modular housing companies. But some of our subsidized builds for public housing are really moving forward quickly because of the ability to build modular low-income housing quickly and cost-effectively and fit it into a whole variety of different environments. And so we've benefited from the fact that we are home to Maple Leaf Homes and Kent Homes and Ironwood and Disher and these companies that have figured out how to build not only, you know, low-income housing, but hotels, multi-unit, commercial infrastructure now. You can get multi-story out of steel wood, which is New Brunswickers have a bias towards things that are built with our beautiful and premium lumber products here because Canada grows better wood than anybody when it comes to wood for construction. And New Brunswick, I would say, is the best of that bunch. So lots to do. Our commitment was 30,000 homes built as quickly as possible. And I'll remind your listeners maybe that we are a province of fewer than a million people. So 30,000 homes when you have a working base of about 350,000 people is a significant amount of builds. And we're going to do that both by making the environment competitive, leveraging our expertise in province from some of these builders, and putting some policies in place as well that make sure that the place that you call home isn't being squeezed for financial value.
Yeah. And the modularity approach is seen as one of the great tools to overcome some of the building hurdles that we have across Canada. And certainly New Brunswick is leading in that space across Canada. You mentioned also, I think in your platform around health care, just making sure the province has and the people that live there have the right access to health care. And I think part of what was just supporting more health clinics across the board. Can you maybe talk to us about your healthcare goals And because that's back to construction as well, I think. And do you think that's still going to go ahead and what the timeline looks like?
Yeah, I know it's going to go ahead because that's our number one commitment to New Brunswickers, right? The biggest issue of the last election and the issue that's on most people's minds is if a loved one gets sick, my kid, my parent, or myself, am I going to have access to healthcare? Too many New Brunswickers don't have access to a family doctor. It's more than 20% of our population. Even the people that do have access can't get it in 5 days' time, which is not going to work if my kid's fever is 104. I'm not waiting 5 days to get her into a doctor. But our hospital system is overrun, right? Like your alternative is go get primary care from the ER, which means sitting in an environment surrounded by vulnerable people for hours and hours on end. That's not working. But we're not going to go out and build a bunch more acute care hospitals. We're going to deliver primary care in community close to home. And so what that looks like from an infrastructure perspective is we're taking an approach that is moves away from a one-size-fits-all model. It isn't here is the clinic and we're going to go and build it in these 48 communities. It's really going to depend on the communities, who's in them, how they want to practice. So maybe there's a pharmacy that wants to attract some healthcare professionals and build out a common location and set of services. Maybe there's a team of nurse practitioners that wants to get together and collate. Maybe there's a municipality that's really desperate to have healthcare services and is going to give up space in a municipal facility for a clinic that they want run. We're working with health authorities, with pharmacists, with municipalities to figure out how can we get these clinics up and running in many places. They don't have to look the same. They don't all have to be new builds. Some of them might be new builds. And those are generally happen a lot quicker when they're being driven by the medical community. When we've had a few physicians, nurse practitioners, and others get together and say, we want to do this. We want to do it our way. We then have to put together the model of how we pay for primary care that makes space for those infrastructure investments that the healthcare practitioners are making to be covered off through the way that they charge us for services to the population. So we're changing how we pay for primary care and how we pay healthcare professionals. We're really getting flexible on what collaborative community care clinics look like because we have some communities that are older and some that are younger, some that are more dense and urban, a lot that are rural and dispersed. And you're going to see a whole bunch of different types of clinics evolve in New Brunswick. But our commitment was a minimum of 10 this year, 30 in the next 3 years. I think we're going to exceed our 10 threshold this year. It might be 11, 12. But it's not actually about how many clinics. At the end of the day, it's about making sure every New Brunswicker is attached to a primary care home. So we're not going to stop doing this until every New Brunswicker knows that there's a place they can go that's going to be open at 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. that can deal with that kid that has 104 fever or whatever the thing is. That's the ultimate goal. These collaborative clinics are one of the tools that I think will get us there.
Building Connections is brought to you by IPEX, leaders in thermoplastic piping systems, where innovation meets reliability. Elevate your infrastructure projects with our comprehensive range of products designed for durability and efficiency. Visit ipexna.com to discover how our solutions can enhance your next project today.
You mentioned collaboration and partnerships. So one thing I wanted to ask you in terms of whether it's the clinics or the housing or any of the infrastructure projects, how do you see some of these projects happening in partnership with, say, not only the public sector, but private companies, developers, or local communities? Is there a partnership approach that you're taking there? And what does that maybe look like in terms of some of these projects?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the key piece to it, is that we need to move quickly. So we need to lean on our private sector partners that know how to build fast. We need to make sure that we're speccing and putting out the right kind of tendering and proposal process, because again, the needs will look different in different communities. The municipal infrastructure sometimes varies in terms of what exists for wastewater and curbing and other things. And so each municipality might have different packages to make and building there more attractive. And it depends on whether we're building supported housing or low-income housing, or whether it's market housing being built with some expectation of an affordable component in there. So a lot of conversations happening with our developers to make sure that we really understand what they need to make a project work and that they understand what we're trying to accomplish so that it can be a win, because most developers want their tenants, their customers to be successful. They want to live in communities that have people who are safely and sustainably housed. And so we've been making some changes. We've been making some changes to how we partner and who does what. Certainly our speed of cycle, how long it might take to suggest there's a project coming, to know that there's budget for it, to put an RFP process through, a streamlined process for folks who we've worked with before. So as they become successful in this, then we can take information they've already submitted and try to streamline the process. And we've also put this into the hands of a housing corporation that is led by a CEO and has a bit more nimbleness than the traditional structures of government to really tackle all the different pieces of the housing spectrum.
That's great. And in terms of investing in New Brunswick, a lot of opportunity for growth. And what do you see the biggest opportunity or benefit for a business maybe looking to invest inside the province of New Brunswick, whether it's a manufacturing like us that are looking to maybe expand facilities? Is there a message that you tend to explain to people in terms of the benefit of investing and being present in the province?
New Brunswickers are pretty friendly folks who really do like our neighbors, but also want to know who your mother and father are. There's value in building relationships with New Brunswickers as you consider partnerships, but we are pretty strategically located. And this has been shifting as we look at the dynamic with the U.S., right? New Brunswick is an entry point to the U.S., certainly for Newfoundland, PEI, Nova Scotia, or the border that we share with Maine sees $12 billion of goods cross it through integrated rail and port and other and roads. And that kind of access to the New England market, which is the most densely populated market in the U.S., whether it's you're talking Boston and New York and other their major cities are right there beside us, but we're also on the water, right? We're on tidal water, and the ability to get resources to tidal water matters. And we have not only a port that operates a refinery, there's an energy connection from New Brunswick to the rest of the world that is, I think, really interesting, especially as we look at energy in terms of different materials and whether that's biomass materials or whether that's oil and gas products or otherwise. We're uniquely situated to gain access to markets from our eastern seaboard position. But New Brunswick has a lot of stuff going on. We like to think about big mining projects that we talk about in Northern Ontario and these places that seem far reaching and hard to get to. There is mining opportunity in New Brunswick from a critical minerals perspective that includes antimony, indium, tungsten, molybdenum, manganese. So we're inviting people to come here and check out how accessible the mining opportunities in New Brunswick are, because you don't need to build an ice road that's going to survive for a couple seasons. It's literally in the community next door and very well serviced. So there's some exciting opportunities, and we could talk more about energy infrastructure because we're investing in wind, we're investing in solar, we have a nuclear base, we're looking at hydrogen projects. And so there's some really interesting energy infrastructure opportunities in New Brunswick right now.
And the wind and solar projects, are those based on certain goals in terms of sustainability, or why investing in those types of projects versus maybe a traditional or alternative energy source?
That's a great question. Those projects are actually becoming really interesting because they're starting to achieve on all fronts, right? We know that wind power is more environmentally friendly. Obviously, it's a non-emitting or clean energy source. And New Brunswick has wind assets all across the top, Barbados, Chaleur, all down the borders that we share with Maine, and even out into some coastal waters on the other side. And the financials on wind is really starting to return, right? It's becoming the cost of generation versus the cost of sale much more interesting. And we do have an imperative because we have a single integrated utility in NB Power that integrates all of our nuclear and hydro and all of our generation assets, a little different than some other provinces and jurisdictions, but they have a mandate to deliver clean energy to New Brunswickers. And I think we're at about 85% clean now, but we want to push that to be as clean as possible. New Brunswickers want that. We want reliability. So there's been some interesting work done on how we store and what kind of battery network we build and how does that work at the community level when you look at distributed generation. And that's why we've got a company that you would know well, Siemens, who's been here building out leading solutions in grid connectivity and smart grid models in New Brunswick. So we're a great place to come and to build out the kind of energy solutions that are becoming more and more popular, more and more lucrative within an environment that is ready to support those kinds of projects and initiatives.
It seems like an exciting place to be. And I really never really thought about the geographic element as quite as you put it in terms of it's obvious, so close to the biggest market, you're close to the oceans, and you're nestled in between some other. But the one thing that's really curious for me is fast forward 5 years. And if you look back on all the great work that you're doing in New Brunswick and your team and the citizens, what's the legacy you want to leave behind as premier?
Well, that's a great question. The first thing that I would love to be able to say is that we've delivered healthcare to each and every New Brunswicker. Right? That everyone is attached to a team of people that are close to home that can support them and deliver primary care. I think that's for peace of mind, for our future wellness and being, that's critical. The one that we haven't talked about that is big for me, and I don't know if this is a factor of being a mom or three kids or who knows what, but I think the most important thing that provincial governments are responsible for is education. We're responsible for early childhood, for K to 12, for post-secondary education. And if you want to change the trajectory of a society or of a province, it's with education. And right now, we could have a whole separate conversation about our school infrastructure. Old schools built a certain way, the template for a school and what, you know, how we RFP out new school designs. Like, it's time for some real innovation and creativity into what the school of the future looks like so that we can not only be delivering literacy and numeracy skills that are going to help our kids thrive, not only be delivering the breakfast and lunch programs that make sure that every kid has a shot at achieving their full potential. What does the environment that they're doing that in look like to respond to the society of today and tomorrow? Five years, hopefully we will have achieved on the healthcare front so that I can be devoting my next 5 years to legacy change on the education side.
That is a very excellent outlook in terms of a legacy, healthcare, education, and then tackling some of the other infrastructure projects. Is there anything else maybe you want to talk about before we sign off today?
No, look, the only thing that I want to say is that we here in New Brunswick are really keen to connect. If you have an idea and you want to try something, New Brunswick is a phenomenal petri dish. We are a great place for a pilot project. If you have new materials, a new idea in building, whether it's energy infrastructure or healthcare infrastructure, we have a pretty accessible province. You can send me an email, susan.holt@gnb.ca, and we can get your pilot project off the ground quickly here. You can test out what works, and then you can take it to the New England or the American market or to all the other provinces in Canada. So I would encourage your listeners to come and see us, to reach out. If you want to test something new, I think we can offer you a really responsive and fast-acting place to try out your new innovations and infrastructure and buildings. So I would love to hear from some of your listeners who might love to come and check out New Brunswick and take advantage of what a great place we are to try something new.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed this. And I think the province is in great hands with your premiership.
Thanks, Greg. It's been great to connect with you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Building Connections. You can find links to all of the resources mentioned in today's episode in the show notes. If you're finding value in our podcast, please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us connect with more listeners like you. Don't miss out on future episodes. Keep listening and building connections with us.